Welcome to the bonus Q&A for episode 118. Wow, we have had a busy week.
We really have. There's a lot going on.
One of the things we have been working on is getting our schedule in place for Summer Game Fest, which we are going to. And we'll talk about this maybe a little bit more on the podcast next week, but we're actually driving down.
It's going to be
to Los Angeles.
A fun road trip down to Summer Game Fest, and things are getting crazy and busy, and we're looking forward to it.
Yeah, it definitely feels, so we go to like, you know, the hands-on gameplay part of that, and it definitely feels like there's a lot of companies going to that.
Yeah, like, companies too.
We don't always know what every, you know, game is going to be, but things feels like it's going to be a lot happening, and we're going to be seeing a lot of games, which will be fun for us.
Our schedule is completely jam-packed.
We may not even be eating lunch.
Or taking a break.
The Return of Soylent?
No, I'll just subsist on many cups of coffee.
Okay, that's the solution. But nice to take a little break, do a bonus Q&A, do some questions. Let's start with a question from Link. Hey, Kit and Krista, a while ago you mentioned in Discord that you had officially trademarked Kit and Krista. What was this process like? Was it what you expected?
It was honestly a terrible process.
I don't know what I expected, I guess, to answer that.
I also expected it to be terrible because I had heard horror stories about the whole trademark thing is very muddy. The whole thing is confusing.
So timing wise, we did this before we initiated this.
Yeah.
Before we announced that we were doing anything. Before I think we'd started this while we were still at Nintendo.
We did.
Quite honestly.
We did. Yeah.
Because we had heard that it would take a while, mm-hmm. and boy did it ever. But you knew somebody who was an expert in doing this for creators.
That's right.
Specifically.
Yeah.
And again, knowing that we were coming from Nintendo and having this point about, you know, the importance of your IP drilled into you, we're like, this feels like an important thing that we should do just kind of for our own, you know, well-being as IP.
Yeah, exactly.
So what we wanted to get trademarked was literally our names.
Right.
Kit and Krista, which you would think, oh, it's your name? Yeah, we can trademark that. But when we, you know, there's a lot of information you have to submit and you have to talk about, like, well, what are you going to be doing with this? Mm-hmm. And you know, what is the use exactly going to be? And the person came back and she was very
skeptical
of, yeah, I don't think this is going to go through.
But
if you really want to try, we can. But based on, you know, the legal precedent and all these other things, and she gave us like pages and pages of examples of things that were in the space that could be confused with Kit and Krista.
Yeah.
Could somehow, like, were close enough to cause some reasonable doubt for
because if someone is using your brand before you file the patent and they have like an existing, you know, habit of usage, then it's really hard for you to get your patent.
Yeah, yeah. So, I don't know about you, but I was always skeptical of this point of like, yeah, this isn't going to work. I was like, I don't know how, like, unless this is just even more backwards than I was finding it to be. I was like, no, I think we have a pretty good claim on this. Again, literally our names connected to us legally in that sense. So we decided, let's go for it.
Right.
And how much time passed before we even heard back?
I think it was like 8 months, almost
a year.
Almost a year, yeah.
Right. And it did go through, to her surprise, it did. And
we had to fill out some additional forms as well because it was our names. And basically, like, trademarking a person's name is like a different process. So we had to like sign this like really weird form that was like, we allow your identity and name to be part of this like legal trademark or something like that. It was very strange.
So, you know, looking back on it, was it as urgent a thing that we needed to do? And we did have to spend a fair amount of money.
Yeah, it was expensive.
To do this as well. I don't know. I mean, it's something that I guess is good to have long term. We did get a certificate out of it. So there's something. Is that certificate, by the way? Hopefully you have
it. It's in the drive.
Because I sure don't.
It's in a drive titled trademark.
Okay, great.
It's in a folder titled trademark. So, I think on like long term, like we always wanted to start this as a long-term thing. It wasn't like this thing that we're going to be doing just for a couple years and then we're going to stop doing it, you know?
Right.
This is a long-term business venture partnership that we want to continue. So who knows what's going to happen? What if there's the Kit and Krista the movie, the game, you know? Then you're going to be happy you have a trademark.
Yeah, there's not been anything that's happened where we're like, oh, thank goodness we have this.
Yeah.
But I guess it is good to have.
Yeah.
You know, a couple maybe weeks or months ago, there was this whole drama of people follow of David Chang, who is, you know,
Chili Crunch,
a celebrity chef.
Yeah.
And he got caught up in a trademark issue, scandal almost.
Yeah. Well, scandal, yes.
He owned a trademark and he was shutting down other people who were, was it Chili Crisp?
Chili Crunch.
Or Chili Crunch, whatever.
Yeah.
And they got really deep into the explanation of that. I was actually able to follow it along and have a point of view on this because I had been through that process myself. So that was interesting.
It's really interesting.
Yes.
Yes. So there's no imposters of Kit and Krista in the world because we have a trademark. Like later on, you never know. What if something happens? What if you make Kit and Krista Chili Crunch?
Mmm.
That's delicious.
That sounds
good.
And
it could be a cool thing to have. And then you'll have a trademark for it.
When we were in San Jose shooting the retro game video, we did walk by on the street the California patent trademark office.
That's right.
And we shook our fist at them. That's what we did.
But they did give us our trademark.
We should
be grateful, right. I suppose.
Kilo Kibo's next. Hi, Kit and Krista. In your Playboy episode, you mentioned that the game was too spicy for Nintendo to release. Nowadays, however, if you go on Nintendo's website and filter by M-rated ESRB titles, you can find arguably saucier games. How do you think this shift in tolerance occurred? Cheers. Well, that's very true. the types of games that are on now are wow.
At your own risk.
Yes.
In the eShop, because there are some smutty games in there.
Right. So I do remember, and I don't want to mention them by name because I don't know off the top of my head if that was public information or not. There were some games in the kind of Wii to Wii U 3DS era where it was deemed, some higher power at the company said, we cannot have this on our platform for content reasons, so we're not going to allow it.
Right.
And
those are always debates.
Right.
And a lot of the times, the team that we were on, the communications team, was really brought in to that process because there would be some sort of, you know, there would be some kind of either press coverage around Nintendo not allowing some kind of more mature game onto the platform, and there was always some kind of like statement that had to be made about it. So there was a lot of discussion always around whether or not these kinds of games belong on a very family-friendly platform.
And it's always an interesting debate because Nintendo is a strong proponent of the ESRB, and the ESRB exists to help inform people of what content is suitable for, you know, the person who is looking for it.
Right.
And, you know, these games in question would, of course, have to go through that ESRB process. So it was always interesting that, like, there was maybe an undercurrent of a feeling like, well, that's still not enough. Like, we just flat out can't have this.
Exactly. That's like a weird, like, you're veering on, if not you're already there, on some kind of censorship thing, which is kind of strange.
Right.
Which can get into a strange place.
And it's not like
a slippery slope.
It's not like these games were going to get into the adults-only rating either, which is, like, truly a kiss of death. Like, I don't think we've had a game recently
that's adults-only
that has been skirting or has been brushing up against the adults-only rating. But I remember, like, Manhunt was a game
where
there was
a
talk
few.
About it. And it was like, oh, yeah, there's all these things that kick in if your game gets adult only. And it's basically, like, you know, you can't sell it.
Yeah, exactly.
Right,
so I think publishers are pretty careful about that. I mean, the ratings are there for a reason.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's all types of audiences on the platform, which is, I think, what Nintendo has kind of, you know, let happen nowadays, right? Like in the Switch eShop, they're just kind of letting the ESRB do its thing. And yeah, there's lots of M-rated games in there.
I remember, so around the time we were leaving, remember those new versions of Grand Theft Auto were coming out?
Yeah.
For like the anniversary of three, Vice City and San Andreas.
Mm-hmm.
And even then there were some people, not people who were like, you know, executives or decision makers, but there were some people who were hand-wringing like, oh no, what's it going to mean if Grand Theft Auto is on a Nintendo system? I was like,
get over it.
we're 20 years past this conversation.
Exactly, like, yeah. Ship has sailed,
I really can't believe we're having this conversation
Hentai
now.
Cloth is on the eShop. I think that ship has long sailed.
Excuse you, it's AAA Hentai Cloth.
I'm sorry. My bad. I don't own that game, unfortunately.
So, yeah, there is just kind of like an ongoing mindset of pearl clutching at times.
That's true.
But what happened, I mean, so honestly what happened is like, you know, times got bad and...
They were desperate.
The company needed to look for ways to, you know, get business and get people interested in the platform. And there was kind of more of a push for like a wider range of games.
Yes.
Working with more indie developers who had concepts for games that were, you know, maybe outside of what you would consider to be a traditional game mm-hmm. at the time. And then, you know, everybody realized that the world did not end when this happened.
Right.
I do think they should probably... I don't think it's great to have AAA Hentai Clock just out there listed on the eShop. I don't know.
I mean, it's rated properly, isn't it?
I guess.
Then that's fine.
Maybe this could be our next video.
Oh my.
Or not.
I mean, I'm not judging. I don't judge. You can play whatever game you want. I don't care if you're playing an adults-only game. That's up to you. But as long as I think it's properly rated and there's like whatever... parental controls in place if you have like a young person on that system. Like, I don't know if it's Nintendo's responsibility or any company's responsibility to police that for you. And I'm honestly like pretty glad that they have sort of just let that be and just trust the rating boards in play in this industry to do their job, you know? Because I do think that when they were in their hand-wringing stage of the Wii and Wii U era, where there was literally meetings, like, all the time about whether or not some saucy game should come to a Nintendo platform, it was, like, kind of ridiculous, yeah. Honestly. So, yeah, I mean, up to you!
All right, we have Switching Up _ next. Here we are. We live in a time when the successor to the Nintendo Switch has finally been recognized by Nintendo. What would be happening behind the scenes now? When Nintendo Switch was officially announced to the public, did this change what was happening at Nintendo in terms of the lead-up to the eventual release? Do things begin to ramp up, or would they be working on an already predetermined timeline? Excited to hear your thoughts about Switch 2 and what the next 10 months will look like. So I remember, yeah, when they did that... for the Switch, you know, when they announced the NX with the next system, like, it was just another day.
It was.
Because if you were involved in working on it...
You've been working on it.
You already had
time.
Been working on
yeah.
it. That was not some, like, point where anything changed, where, like, oh, now everybody's involved, because that was... You just knew a code name.
Yeah.
You didn't actually... Not everybody knew everything about the system.
Right.
So when it gets properly revealed, and people can see it, know what it is, know what some games are, that'll be a different story.
Mm-hmm.
But up until now, it's just another day working of either you're working on this or you're working on something else.
Yeah.
I'm sure. I mean, they do a lot of, you know, internal. I'm sure there was some message from Doug Bowser today. We're taking a step into the next generation of Nintendo excellence.
They have this thing in the company is like the internal like
yes.
intranet. So Insight
yes.
is like the little like web thing that you go to look at like what's the Cafe Mario
yeah.
serving and like if
right.
there's a message from Doug Bowser, but there's always that same photo of
yep.
him and it's like
message from
Doug
Bowser
and it's
yeah.
like something exactly to what you were saying
yeah.
like we're
yeah.
entering the new era
right.
for
so,
Nintendo.
Again, if you're in one of those departments that is not, you know, needing to be plugged into like the details of the day-to-day happenings of the business, you might okay, this is big news, something's happening.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, for the people that we were working with and the teams we were working with, it was like whatever.
They also have like a pretty set calendar, I think, at this point as well. So this was just like the
yeah
one
it's
of the things
checkmark.
On the schedule
it's just a checkmark,
or whatever,
yeah.
and it's like okay, on to the next thing that's gonna
yeah. They have much bigger things that they're
right
focused
right.
on, honestly.
Yeah,
so.
And so they're doing what they're doing. You know, and this has been happening in the background for a long time, where they're meeting with different third party publishers. They're probably doing all the stuff, getting the system obviously like ready to launch, and yeah, and then like once, and there's gonna be a timeline for like what that proper reveal looks like. Maybe there's work being done on that, you know, whether it's some kind of big trailer or some kind of direct or some kind of in-person event or a combination of all those three things. There's a lot of work that needs to be done to get that all together. So I'm sure the teams are working really hard. What I don't envy is that the timeline is working out, so it feels like they're going to be working through Christmas, which I feel bad for.
Well, that always happens.
Because if they're going to do some sort of January event, you know, like they did for Switch, you're not having a holiday. You're not seeing your family at Thanksgiving. Forget about Christmas. You're going to be working through that entire 2 months leading up to the reveal. And that was tough. And
yeah.
I feel bad for them.
Yeah. Yeah. Mandome Jock has the next question. Hey, Kit and Krista, now that you don't work a 9-to-5, how would you describe your work-life balance? What do you have more time to do? Does Krista always go on vacations? Curious, since I'm considering starting my own business.
I am always on vacation. I'm just kidding. I think that it's different because instead of working sort of the more like corporate hours, even though when we were at Nintendo, we never really truly worked a 9-to-5, I would say. It was more, it was more hours than 9-to-5, honestly.
Right.
Now it's like you kind of work 24 hours a day, except for when you're sleeping. But it's not bad. I don't know if that sounds crazy, but yeah, that's kind of what it is. Like even on vacations, you're kind of doing a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, we've gone on vacations before where we record full episodes of the podcast as part of that vacation. Yeah, so it's like you do have to keep doing stuff because you're the only two people that are here to do it. So you can't actually, like, just not do anything. That would just not work. We try our best, though. I think, like, we do a good job of, like, helping each other out if, like, someone's on vacation. Like we do solo bonus Q&As, for example, mm-hmm. sometimes when somebody's not here, or like we try to take things off the other person's plate as much as possible if they're on a trip. But yeah, it's kind of the realization that you probably, as long as you're doing this, you're never going to have a vacation ever again, in the sense of like you can't truly like
unplug. Well, that sounds unplug. Harsh. Jeez.
Not in a bad way.
Okay.
Like you can't fully just like fall off the grid.
I mean, you went on vacation last week, and that seems like what you did.
I mean, still, like, check. I think I responded to several emails while I was there, actually. And I looked at a contract
maybe,
as
maybe
well.
Maybe on the so. Way there. I don't know.
I don't know. I feel like I, no. I,
all right.
I was actually working a little bit.
But, yeah, in terms of just, like, day-to-day, like, we typically, like, work from home a little bit in the morning, then come into the office, and then leave, like, early afternoon, then keep doing stuff. But, yeah, it is just kind of, like, incrementally doing things, but there, right. I mean, it is the schedule that you make, so you don't ever feel like, oh gosh, like so-and-so is insisting that I do this meeting at this time that
right.
is so inconvenient for me. So that definitely helps.
We do have a lot of international clients.
Yes, with our consulting, we do.
Yeah, with some meetings that happen at odd hours, which is fine, but yeah,
right.
We have done that before.
Yeah, we have an interesting thing happening this summer where we're both going on a bigger summer vacation,
but that overlap.
But during the same time, which is something that's not happened before.
Yeah.
And we've been trying to get ahead of how's this going to work?
Mm-hmm.
What are we going to do?
The good thing is that we're both.
What are we going to do?
It's going to be fine. I'm not worried. The good thing is that we're both going to Asia, different
right.
parts of Asia. So at least we'll be on the same time zone.
Yes.
Sometimes the time zone was hard when one person was on vacation somewhere and one person was back home.
Right.
Yeah, the thing that I really want to emphasize, even though my previous comment of never taking a true vacation ever again sounded dire and harsh, is
and
that...
And you never will.
That's fine. Is that I actually don't care, because this is a job in which I believe and I fully, like, subscribe to this, is that nothing that we do is a waste of time.
Yes.
Which is totally different than corporate life, where 90% of the things that I was doing, I felt like was a waste of my time. And like 10% of the things that I was doing was actually what I wanted to do. 100% of everything that we do is what I actually want to do. And it's not a waste of time, and it's a good use of my time. And so I don't care that I have to work, you know, different hours or work while I'm on vacation or whatever, because you don't feel like you're wasting your time. The worst was when we were on vacation when we were at Nintendo and someone was like, jump on this call. I'm like, no. Why would I do this? A waste of my time.
Right, right, right.
You know, I'm not calling you. I'm not calling Jeff Keighley on Thanksgiving.
That actually happened. You haven't done the 19th mandatory HR training questionnaire.
Yeah, yeah. Or just like some crazy person that was like, I need you to jump on this right now. I'm like, it's Sunday night.
Not
like,
here.
I'm not doing this.
Yeah.
But I never feel like that here, obviously.
So. Yes. So, sorry, you're going to Vietnam. I'm going to Korea. I've never been to Korea.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have some people who are going to be listening to this who know about Korea. Please send me recommendations.
All I know is that you're going to eat well.
Yes.
Yeah, you're going to eat very well.
I'm going to come back with a new face. That's what I'm going to do.
You're going to come back looking like BTS.
Upgrade, yes. It's going to be cool.
I would really like that.
Next!
If you came back looking like BTS.
Yeah. Which one, though? Oh,
wow.
Lynn has the next question. Hello, Kit and Krista. What was the reaction around the offices like when everyone learned that Nintendo would add, at the time, unreleased Star Fox 2 onto the Super Nintendo Mini? Were people like, oh, wow, that's cool. They're going to do that wowie zowie. Or were they more like, oh, cool, I guess, anyways? Is there an even lower level of excitement than these?
It was kind of like the meh.
I mean, most people had no clue what this was in reference to.
Yeah.
Like, what? There's a Star Fox 2? What? What?
Yeah.
Huh?
Nobody knew.
No.
And it was like such an afterthought too, because they just gave you the thing with a list of games that was going to come on it. It was like you run down the list, and it was there with no fanfare or anything. People that knew, obviously, knew, was like, oh, that's pretty cool.
Right.
Like, that's something that we can, on the communications team, we were like, oh, that's something we could highlight in, like, a tweet or something. Like,
it was very similar to when we were told the name of Metroid Dread.
Oh.
Which they made such a big deal about this. And they're like, this is the highest secret that we can tell you.
That was so hyped.
And there was maybe, like, a dozen people in the room. And I think I was, like, the only person who knew what that meant.
Oh, I was like, okay. I don't even think I knew. I was like, whatever.
I know. I was like, oh, okay. I get the reference. I understand what this is going back to.
Yeah.
But everybody else was like, okay, and?
Yeah.
And so what?
The crickets, the pin drop that you could hear. It was like a bad joke
from a stand-up
comedian.
But I mean, that's just kind of like the level setting that, you know, you got to do at a company like that where not everybody has the same experiences,
right,
or the same level of knowledge, or frankly is like the same age.
Not the same age.
You know,
that's the main thing.
Came up with the same thing. So, that was, you know, kind of what the Treehouse was there to do.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, you know, their job as the quote experts in the Treehouse was to know everything.
Yeah.
They often didn't know everything. Why can't Metroid crawl? They couldn't answer that question.
That person's not there anymore.
Didn't have a clue. Now we know why. So, yeah, I mean, you'd be surprised. Like, some of the deeper cuts, like, there would always be a handful of people who would know and would be psyched, but the majority of people did not know.
I would say, like, 98% did not know or care.
Ninja11 has another question, another stress ranking list, similar to the one I asked a few months ago. This time, instead of nightmare scenarios, it's ranking the stress working on various Nintendo IP. If you walk into a meeting and learn your next project is going to be a game in the blank franchise, rate the panic or pressure you felt on a scale of 1 to 10. 1 being a no panic, pack and ship kind of deal, 10 being Smash Ultimate Sakurai will be upset levels of stress.
Okay.
So here we go. I'm going to give you a name. You're going to tell me 1 to 10.
Okay.
10 is the highest.
Okay.
A Mario platformer.
4.
I'm going to go a little bit higher just because the sales expectations for those were always high.
Yeah, the only thing that I'm worried about is the high profileness of the game, but I'm not worried about this game. The dev team is great. The game is going to sell. Everybody knows Mario. Your job is going to be easy.
Yeah. I'd say it's more like a 5 maybe.
Yeah, 4 or 5.
Yeah.
I would say I'm going to stick with 4 because I think it's easy to market this game.
Right. The Legend of Zelda.
Oh, also 4.
I'd say you're getting a little bit higher, because especially with these later games, they were getting, you know, so worked up over spoilers and preserving the secret of literally everything.
Okay.
And there was a lot of back and forth about that, and there was just a lot of tension.
Yeah.
I mean, it was not like Smash levels tension, but it was, we must preserve the surprise and delight.
You know what? I haven't worked in a Zelda game in a long time. Like, I was sort of like the second.
And when you did, bad things happened.
No.
Meow.
What happened?
The artwork got messed up.
Oh, that one time.
The Hilda artwork, yes.
Oh, Hilda.
See? Never again.
I feel like...
I made those calls in the background.
Oh.
I can't do this again.
You worked on more Zelda games than me. So I never really...
But it wasn't that bad. I mean, that team was fine to talk to.
Yeah.
Only until the last two games, yeah, did the sales expectations get like crazy. Really, really crazy, yeah, huge?
I worked on Skyward Sword and that was really easy. I worked on, yeah, I feel like some of those like games prior to Breath of the Wild, the expectations were different. Yeah, yeah. So
what was your score?
I had a 4 again.
I'm going to go up to a 6 on that one.
All right.
A me game.
7.
What do we mean by
like
a
Miitopia?
So Miitopia, strangely, was one that had like...
It was like 9, 10.
It was a 9 or a 10 for the people... I didn't work on that.
I worked on that a little bit.
For the people who did, it was... This is a strange thing. Like, sometimes the strangest games would have the most unreasonable expectations.
That's what it was.
And this was one of them.
Yeah.
Don't ask why.
It was stupid.
And this is, and again, this is why we dislike Codename Steam, because Codename Steam got into the like 9 or 10 area for this as well.
Yeah, because it had lots of expectations of it being, make this into a hit.
The other game
against all odds
that nobody would ever guess would go into this category was that Brain Age. Oh, or Big Brain Academy that came out right at the time we were leaving.
Oh my God, that one was
It was
ridiculous.
Like, this is going to be the breakthrough casual game. We're bringing back the Wii days.
Grandma's coming back.
Casual games selling 30 million copies.
Yeah. You're 20 years too late, dude.
Literally everybody working on that was like, you're
crazy.
You're completely out of touch. Like, yeah. Did you come up with this?
This has passed. This is long gone.
But again, all the decision makers were like, we have to make this breakthrough smash hit launch.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, this Miitopia one on Switch was a huge headache.
It wasn't even the first version of Miitopia.
I know. It was very horrible. Rare. It was like, it was also tied to this ridiculous celebrity campaign that was a major, major nightmare. Right. So I would say this one was like,
eventually? Addison Rae. Yes.
Barf. Dislike her.
They had to do stuff with her.
It was horrible.
Gosh. A Mario spinoff.
What does this mean?
So what's an example? Like, were we talking about like a Mario RPG? Like a Paper Mario?
Oh.
Like Mario Sports? Let's call it Mario Sports.
5? The expectations were never really that high with Mario spinoffs, I would say.
Well, later on, though, there was a lot of expectations of celebrity involvement. Of
For sports, yes.
Let's get this tennis player.
Yeah, it was like Rafael Nadal is going to do the thing.
Did you have to pull some all-nighter for Rafael Nadal to play a tennis match? Or?
I did. I had to wait for him to win a tennis match.
You did a lot of annoying things for Mario Tennis, actually.
I kind of did. I kind of blocked it out. For Mario, like any sort of Mario sports game, if there was a celebrity involved, I think maybe 5, 6-ish. But again, the sales expectations were never that high for these games. So it was kind of like people knew that it was just going to be like a filler game and it was fine.
That's harsh.
Just saying.
All right.
It is.
But I agree. It's pretty low.
Yeah.
A mainline Kirby game.
Oh.
This was usually a good time.
It was usually a good time. Maybe like another 4.
I can call that a 3.
Oh, 3.
Yeah.
Just like Kirby.
Just like the game itself.
It's crazy.
Yeah, nobody's getting hurt.
Although there was this like, whenever we do Kirby games, we have to market to kids. And marketing to kids is hard because there's so many like limitations.
Right,
there's
so
many things you can't do because of like the COPPA laws and stuff like that. And who knows what the kids want these days. They're nuts.
Yeah.
So.
And then finally, Fire Emblem.
This was low stress too. Low stress.
What?
I feel like...
That low?
Yeah. Like, super easy. Again, very managed expectations. We knew the audience very well. Like, we knew exactly who was going to buy a Fire Emblem game.
That's true.
Like, that audience is like, you can read them like a book. So easy to come up with the stuff that they would like. The coming up with the game features to highlight was always like a breeze because it's like obviously they like these things, so we're just gonna make like 4 trailers, then we're done.
Yeah, the only headache I remember on a Fire Emblem is like, what was the game that had the face petting? Was that Awakening where they like took it out of the game?
There's some censorship things that were annoying,
right? Like localization changes that like the fan base would get really fixated on.
Yeah, that's true. They should have done that,
and they'd have to like. Talk, explain, or have something prepared for
but,
that.
But, oh, and then there's like there's always like some discussion, discourse, conversation around like same sex marriages and things like that.
Yeah,
so there is some like broader topics that would come up in Fire Emblem games, but usually the game was like improving in that sense of being more inclusive, like. Every Fire Emblem game, I would say, is a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
And that localization team, that dev team, seems to really want to do that.
Yeah.
So that was actually positive because sometimes you're like, are you not willing to make these changes or something? So yeah, I would say really low stress on a Fire Emblem game.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to wrap up with a non-gaming question from Riven. Where were you when Y2K shattered the world and changed everything? It really didn't, but people were freaking the heck out about it for a while there in the late 90s. Well, you wouldn't know because you were only born in 2002.
Oh, fun.
So you've only, you know, read about it on the internet. You've just seen a TikTok about Y2K. That's all you know about
it.
That's
true. Where were you?
I was there. It's true. People were making a huge deal out of this. I never really understood it. Because I was like, is this really how these things were made, or is this really what's going to happen?
Yeah, the whole idea was like, it was like on a clock where the formulas would get messed up, right?
Right.
The number goes to zero.
It was not able to recognize the change of the year into the double zero.
Into the zero,
right.
Yeah.
So it would mess up.
Yeah, that was the whole idea of Y2K.
The one thing that I really remember that I thought was hardcore, and I don't even know if this was true, I think it was just something that I had heard, was that the guy within the government of China who was in charge of managing the Y2K response had to be on an airplane at the time of midnight, the stroke of midnight, when it switched from 1999 to 2000. Because, like, your life's on the line, buddy. If this doesn't work, you're going down with this plane. So
no, again, that's an urban myth.
That might be an urban myth, but it has always stuck with me of like,
that
wow.
That is amazing. That's really that's something. So Chinese. That is such a Chinese way to like torture you.
Get the job done, buddy.
100% yeah. Believe this, that a Chinese government.
You're like, that's an urban myth, but I 100% believe that would happen.
I believe that would happen.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's actually true. But I do remember, yeah, like there was so much. It was two parts. One part of it was people were seriously scared.
Yeah.
And one part of it was that people were, it was like a thing to joke around about too. You know, it was a very like pop culture-y.
Right. But a lot of people were also so naive and not knowledgeable about
right.
technology and
that's
the internet
true.
Back then that I think it would be easy to get swept up in
Y2K fever.
Have you heard about the Y2K apocalypse that is coming and
yeah.
like not knowing anything about what it actually
right.
is?
Right, exactly.
And obviously it ended up being a whole bunch of nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. How fun.
Wow.
Y2K. I remember a very specific fashion around Y2K.
Kind of missed, oh, sure.
Kind of missed the Y2K fashion a little bit.
Yeah. Bring it back.
Bring it back.
You should.
Yeah.
All right. Well, everybody remember to give Krista a happy birthday because it is happening this weekend.
Oh, boy.
And who knows what kind of birthday surprise you might have next week. We'll have to find out.
Wow.
End on that cliffhanger. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Bye.